That's right. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Take Back Our Radio, our broadcast for the International Women's Day, five-hour national radio broadcast of action. And we're going from 5 to 10 p.m., transmitting live from the Imperial Pub, 54 Dundas Foodies. Why don't you come down and join us? You're also listening live, www.reggaemania.fm. RMR.
FM. Well, I want to first thank some people who have made this possible for us. First and foremost, we have our bellies are feeling really nice, and that is who's responsible for that? My Market Bakery and Cheese Magic on Baldwin Street in Kensington Market. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we also want to thank, we have a whole bunch of people to thank. I'll do a few right now. We want to thank Eric Mills for his generous donation towards our printing course. Thank you. We also want to thank Stephanie Bertrand, the host of Avalon Show on CKUT, for his assistance. We also want to thank CAPA, the Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault, the Association of Part-Time Undergraduate Students, Basics Community Newsletter, Basics Radio, the Canadian Federation of Students, and Christine Guder for their endorsement and support. We also want to thank the IWD Fair and our organizers for allowing us the time and space to bring our good news to the fair and share with this year's participants. And last but not least, in this section, we want to thank Ron Nelson and Reggaemania.com for providing us with the means of taking back and reclaiming the airwaves.
That's right, that's right. And now we're going to tune in to... Help me out here.
I'm a psychiatric.
Thank you. I'm hoping I don't lose my voice. Longtime anti-psychiatry activist Don White is here with us, and we're going to bring you...
And you know, we also have to thank Don for being vigilant and trying his best to take back the radio. So here's Don.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. Thank you very, very much. And we are going to take back this radio. We are taking it back now. And let me tell you, and this is of course, a special broadcast dedicated to our sisters, psychiatric survivors, shock survivors, and, of course, all women, because this is in honor of International Women's Day. But I want to tell you something about why this broadcast means so much to me. For over 11 months, like other programmers, other 60-plus programmers and hosts of CKLM, we were kicked out without notice, warning, or notice of any kind, you know. So this is sort of sweet that we're going to get revenge. We are getting revenge by speaking out now. They tried to silence the only anti-psychiatry radio program in Canada. Well, they're not silencing it now. I can tell you that. And I won't stand, and brothers and sisters will not stand for this continuing censorship and harassment and threats. So it's a pleasure to be here. So that it means that this is very empowering and personal for me, because the voice, they tried to still the only voice, as far as I know, speaking out against psychiatric oppression and human rights violations in the system in Canada. But we're going to continue. And so that's really important. And so this, once again, I'm Don Whites, and this is, I am producing and hosting an anti-psychiatry radio. This was previously labeled Shrink Wrap 12 years ago. Over that, we changed the name to Anti-Psychiatry Radio, which is much more accurate and consciousness raising. Tonight, I'm dedicating this special edition to all women and psychiatric survivors and sister programmers. And this is featuring a special interview with feminist and anti-psychiatry activist Dr. Bonnie Burstow. Dr. Burstow is an outstanding and outspoken feminist and anti-psychiatry activist on the faculty, the Department of Adult Education and Counseling Psychology at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education, OISE. A little over a week ago, I had the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Burstow, who also happened to be chair of the Ontario Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault. And she is a good friend. So this interview you're about to hear, it's about her views on feminism, anti-psychiatry, and electroshock, and how she became, as one of the very, very few academics in Canada or the United States, how she became an anti-psychiatry activist. And these are a few edited excerpts from the interview, so let's play, Ron, part one.
It's a very special treat to be interviewing you, Bonnie. Welcome to the CKLN in exile.
Well, thank you. I can't think of a better CKLN to be in mind.
Now, how did you come to take an anti-psychiatry position?
I was critical of psychiatry before there was something called anti-psychiatry. So let me be clear about that. And my father was somebody who had over 100 electroshocks. So that happened when I was a teenager, and let me be clear, I was never comfortable with it, not remotely, and I always felt, my father was a psychiatric survivor who was in and out of institutions most of my life, and I always felt that there was something very basically wrong with this solution, right? And so I began with a very, very negative sense of psychiatry. I also began with an enormous feeling of threat from psychiatry because I was the person who most resembled my father in the family. So I also felt like somebody with whom this horrible institution was somewhere on my horizon. And I always felt that this institution, that supposedly every intellectual was supposed to believe there was something to, it had no place. And it was the answer with no place. But then in the very early 1970s, I was working for a local initiative project, and I don't know if you remember those, Dawn, the local initiative project.
Oh, sure.
Project.
The local,
and it was called LIP. It was called LIP, yes. Local initiative project. And at the time, there was one that was independent, that had nothing to do with the hospital, but we were operating out of the hospital, and it had a terrible name called Adjustment into Society.
Oh, I remember that name.
Dreadful name.
Yes, I know.
But I was a LIP worker.
Sorry.
A LIP worker. I worked AIS, Adjustment into Society.
Exactly.
And what I was doing was trying to get people out of the psych system into the community. As I was doing that, of course, they hired me knowing I was totally against psychiatry. And I met all sorts of psychiatric nurses, psychiatrists, and so on, and many of them on an individual level were okay people, but what they were doing was fundamentally flawed. And they seemed a telling statistic came out as they were trying to, eventually the project was canceled, but a very telling statistic came out of those people who were helped by the LIP workers who didn't have a medical model to those who weren't. In the case of patients at Queen Street, this is Queen Street where people were, those people who had not had a LIP worker, if they had been in hospital 90% of the time, they returned, and only 10% did they ever stay out. If they had a LIP worker, 90% of the time they stayed out, and only 10% did they return. It meant that people working without a medical model were doing way better work.
Absolutely.
Than that's people with a medical model. And as a feminist therapist, my therapy and my understanding of it was informed by an anti-psychiatry perspective. In most therapy, there's kind of a mainstream position, even if it isn't psychiatry, where there's something wrong with these people, and you're trying to help them get it right. Whereas, if you begin with saying there's something wrong with the world, and these people may need help coping with that something wrong with the world, but in fact the problem does not originate from inside them, you are beginning in a very different place. So I was beginning in a place where there was something wrong with the world, not something wrong with these people, and these people may have been made unfunctional because of the world, but they were not the locus of where the problem began. So it became the importance of feminism, the importance of seeing that women are an enormous threat of psychiatry. That psychiatry is part of the patriarchy that does regulate women. That most of the patients are women, that women get most of the drugs, that women get most of the electroshock, and so on and so forth. And that insofar as men are harmed by psychiatry, and there's no question they are, why they're harmed is being they're being treated like women. And so then a lot of my energy then became divided between overt anti-psychiatry, where as an activist I was anti-psychiatry, and trying to bring feminist thinking aboard. So I was the consultant of Breck and tried to help them incorporate a feminist analysis, and I've tried to help many, many quote feminist unquote social services reshift how they look at things. So every learned journal article I've published on electric shock, and I believe I'm now up to four, has specifically been a feminist article specifically focusing on the plight of women.
What about that, about electric shock? I think about why it is, or your understanding of it, is that mainly women have been targeted and have suffered more than men.
A long time ago, a psychiatric survivor said that electroshock is a gentleman's way of battering women, and I think we have to take that very, very seriously. If we look at the numbers throughout history, 2 to 3 times as many women as men are electroshocked. A very early proponent of electroshock said, I believe these people have more intelligence than they can handle, and the reduction of intelligence is an important factor in the curative process, unquote. Now, if you look at who these people are, and you look at the fact that they're overwhelmingly women, then you know that they're saying that some people's brains are expendable, in fact, some people are better off without brains, and who exactly, which segment it is, it's women. Now, he also, for sure, we cannot forget the statistics that this is a white, middle-class, white woman phenomenon. That makes it a women's issue, is that women are being subjected to these treatments. They're being subjected because they are women. What also adds to the feminist understanding of this is that we now have proof that women are more brain damaged by the treatment than men are. This came out in the historic Sackheim study. Okay. And so the story is that women are targeted even though it is proven that they are hurt more, that they have more memory loss, more brain damage from it, etc. Fundamentally, this is a frontal assault on women. For a feminist not to take this up, then becomes unthinkable. Now we're in another really strange quandary here, and that also adds to this being a feminist issue, and that's that it's now being labeled the treatment of choice for postpartum depression, which means mothers are in enormous jeopardy,
right?
New mothers. Right. And disproportionately, and this has been true for many, many years, elderly women are electroshocked. So now we have even a new component because of the strong relationship between mother and child. We're now seeing a rise in the electroshocking of children under 4. So all of this makes it a huge feminist issue. No matter what we say people should be given in terms of information, a psychiatrist will always find a way to waffle it.
Yes.
So to me, it's not the issue. To me, the issue is that psychiatry wants this. It will always misinform people, no matter what laws there are out there. And no person who really understood what was about would ever want it.
So I wrote a song called No Hole.
And that was Dr. Bonnie Burstow in part one. I'm talking about about anti-psychiatry and her involvement in the movement. And now this is a break. Now we're taking a break. Excerpt from the song There Is No Hole in My Head by Malvina Reynolds.
With candy wrappers, keep on sex and revolution, but there's no hole in my head. Call me a dupe of this and the other. Call me a puppet on a string. They don't know my head's for me and that I have my own special thing. And there's no hope in my head.
Okay. That's Malvina Reynolds, There Is No Hole in My Head, which the psychiatrists try to put in the heads of women and others with electroshock and their so-called safe and effective drugs. Now we're into part two of the interview with Dr. Bonnie Burstow, an outstanding feminist and anti-psychiatry activist.
Nobody wants to believe they have been brain-dead. And so we can expect legitimately that a part of the process for people who've been electroshocked would be a kind of denial, and, or once even they can't deny anymore, covering up, because no one wants to be seen as somebody who can't think, who can't remember, who can't. Now, a lot of people work their way through it, and most people take 5-6 years to work their way through this, we know that, and some people don't.
Some never do.
And one can totally understand that, because it's a terrible thing to face. I'm writing a novel about where the narrator has been electroshocked, and she goes a lot quicker. I mean, she puts together in about 2 years, but that's very rare.
But I'm constantly amazed and in awe of women, and men too, but particularly with him, who get up in public for the first time. And you've seen this and heard this at our rat rallies, and you met them, of course, talking the first time.
It's very brave.
Talk about what shock did to them.
It's very brave.
And it takes so much courage to talk. I mean, one's own brain being damaged, and to admit that in public, and then to go on and to describe how it hurt them and virtually destroyed their lives, like Wendy Funk-Kuhn, who wrote a book about her. So it takes an incredible amount of strength and courage.
There's no question.
It's in public.
And there's one of the ways of operating that I think is which the movement against shock and against psychiatry in general has picked up from feminism, is the importance of people who are conscious raising among people who've been through the same situation, and people who've been through that situation going on to speak out and to bear witness, and to ask you to bear witness to their experience. Feminism has a history of involvement with anti-psychiatry. That some of the strong critiques of psychiatry as patriarchy most of them came from feminists, and there was huge support of things like Phyllis Chesler's thing on Mad Women. There was huge support of the Persimmon Blackridge and Sheila Cahooley exhibit of what was happening to lesbians at the hand of psychiatry. So that there has been a space within feminism for anti-psychiatry, and when I say that, it's not like I'm saying that they understood anti-psychiatry or they went as far as anti-psychiatry, but they were very sympathetic to anti-psychiatry.
Right.
And because they did see psychiatry as fundamentally the patriarchy, and the patriarchy that was endangered all women, and that by extension endangered all human beings. So I think that was always very fundamental. I do not think we're in a good era right now when it comes to feminism. When I'm saying that, it's not that I'm saying that there aren't feminist organizations that understand the importance of anti-psychiatry. In fact, right now, Sistering, which is Group for Homeless Women in Toronto, has started a group for psychiatrized women, and they tend to do something at our coming protest against electroshock. And that's very, very promising, because that's a feminist presence.
Right.
So there still is feminist support. And so when I say these things, I want to be really clear. There's very few movements that have been or continue to be as supportive of anti-psychiatry as feminism. That said, nonetheless, I think we're not in a good period when it comes to feminism. And I don't want to lay blame. It's not inherently obvious that was caused by the feminists or that was caused by, but we are not in a good time. And we're at a time where if you go onto listservs, feminist listservs, you will hear people say, why does electroshock have such a bad name? You will hear that kind of thing. We are also at a period where, psychiatrists are overwhelmingly men, where more women have become psychiatrists and call themselves feminist psychiatrists. And when that starts happening, people start questioning maybe psychiatry isn't so bad. So the onus is on anti-psychiatry to invite the feminist movement back in. Whenever you want another movement to join you, you have to make the space welcome to that movement. Certainly part of CAPA, Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault's attempt, was through the Mother's Day initiative, where we protested shock on Mother's Day and kept feminism alive and clear in that protest, because that's part of creating that space. Whenever you want a movement to join you on your issues, you have to create that space. And the onus is on you to create that space. It's not for the other people to figure it out and to come in. 2 years ago, Kappa instituted an international protest against electroshock on Mother's Day. Now, when I say international, it's because we were not the only group, we were not the only city, and we were not the only country. Is it huge? No, it's not huge, but it's growing. Mm-hmm. Why did we choose Mother's Day? Because women are disproportionately shot. Because mothers are particularly targeted, because women are being given shock for postpartum depression. But in addition to that, but also because older women are shocked, and so the image we had is mothers, new mothers, and grandmothers are being shocked, and so our slogan for this, and I think it's a terribly important slogan, is stop shocking our mothers and grandmothers. That was our theme, and that hopefully will continue to be our theme. It's a terribly, terribly important thing. And that's a saying loud and clear. We understand this as feminists, as anti-psychiatry feminists, we understand it, not just as anti-psychiatry people. We're doing another Mother's Day event again on Mother's Day because we are saying this is about women, this is about mothers, this is about grandmothers, this is about our family. We have a feminist vision in Kappa, and our vision is aligned with the expansive notion of feminism that to me makes feminism revolutionary, and that's that we are trying to create a better world for all human beings.
Right.
A world where all human beings can walk in freedom and not be dragged to institutions. A world where all human beings have dignity. That is what feminism is about. It is not just about women, and that is what Kappa and anti-psychiatry is about.
That was the end of part two of the special interview I had. It was really a pleasure to interview, and I hope Dr. Bonnie Burstow's views, her feminist analysis of psychiatry and anti-psychiatry in particular, came through loud and clear, because this was an exclusive interview, and I was very pleased to have it and to bring it to you. Okay, so I just want to point out that electroshock is still going on in Ontario. Roughly 14,000 at least electroshocks are given each year in Ontario. It costs the taxpayers close to $2 million to zap people's brains, especially women's brains, because women are supposed to, apparently, according to the male shrinks, their brains are apparently much more expendable than men's, because that's the sexism inherent in electroshock since its beginning over 60 years ago. It is a brain-damaging, memory-destroying procedure which has no place in any kind of enlightened or humane society, and yet it's sanctioned mainly because of the powerful psychiatric lobby here and in the United States and around the world. Now, I just want you to know that some of the more famous people who have been electroshocked, usually against their will, is women artists, including, before I get to that, I just should say that the reason we're focusing on women, particularly, especially now, is that 2 to 3 times more women than men are electroshock. Therefore, it's a women's issue. Women suffer more brain damage and memory loss than men. This has been thoroughly documented in studies, especially in the 2007 study by Dr. Harold Sackheim, which came out, as I say, about a year and a half ago. Some of the famous people that have been electroshocked, usually against their will, have been poets and writers like Sylvia Plath, Anne Sexton, and of course Ernest Hemingway. Many women shock survivors like Carla McCaig and Pivy Lane in Toronto, Sue Clark in Ottawa, Wendy Funk in Whitehorse, Yukon, Hélène Grandbois in Montreal, and Mary Maddock in Cork, Ireland, have called electroshock torture or a crime against humanity. Grassroots resistance led by women survivors and feminist activists is growing. During the last 3 years, women shock survivors and feminist activists have led anti-shock rallies and protests in 3 cities in 2 countries, Canada and in Ireland. On Mother's Day, as Bonnie Burstow had mentioned, in 2007, anti-shock protests were held in Toronto, Montreal, and Cork, Ireland, and the Toronto protest was organized by the Coalition Against psychiatric assault, of which I'm a very proud member. Last year, there was a similar protest, mainly in Ottawa, Montreal, and Ireland, again led by women. And this year, on May 10th, Mother's Day, the same theme, Stop Shocking Our Mothers and Grandmothers. It will take place probably at Queen's Park, and I'll put more info on our website. And the CAPA website, that stands for the Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault, is organizing this, and you can get more information at kappa.oise.utoronto.ca. So I just want to say a wind up, right?
Yeah.
I'll wind up with thanks. I may be staying over, but you know, thanks a lot. I want to just give special thanks to everybody who helped organize this, Verlia and others, and Stephanie Good and Carmel and Susie, and Ron Nelson and Dale Whitmore for teching. And, you know, so many others that have offered their support for me over the years and now, and to help bring this special programming on the voice of the psychiatrist, anti-psychiatrist ADO, because we are some of the most marginalized and discriminated against in the world. And once again, please stay tuned to the special broadcast of Take Back Our Radio, which we are doing tonight.
Yay.
So an honor. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Don. Yes, and you're listening to Take Back Our Radio on www.rmr.fm. And yes, we are going. We have so much more programming for you. And before we continue, we want to do some thanks again. So we want to thank two strong women and special women whose support and work in collaboration with our collective has made what some thought too immense to pull off an inspiring and empowering action. They are Christiana Clemens, music director at CKUT, and former CKLN Ryerson alumna who produced our Rockin' PSA all the way in Montreal and in less than a day, and Gretchen King, news director, also with CKUT Radio, and a generous source of advice and help and solidarity. We also, again, and I know Don mentioned it before, but again, we want to say thanks to Dale Whitmore and Sheila Chevalier for teching, helping us out here 2 to 5 hours. We also want to thank the many volunteers, you sitting down here enjoying us, who came down tonight to help unload equipment, set up console, eat food, have beer, laugh with us. Thank you so much for being here. To owners and staff of the Imperial Pub, thank you, Imperial Pub, for allowing us the space to broadcast and welcoming us here. One thing, if you didn't know, Imperial Pub has been with us from day one. We've held our meetings here upstairs. We would meet, we would have our food, we would have our drinks, and we would try to strategize. Some of those meetings were challenging, but we know that we could have had it because we had the support of Imperial Pub, so thanks. Woo!